Hello, I'm Tom Edwards, and a very warm welcome to you. In another not too distant life, I was an announcer at the legendary Thames Television. Teddington Studios was a fabulous place to work, and I have some fond memories, which I hope to share with you all at some point on Distinct Nostalgia. But today I'm here to introduce a very special reunion remembering a big favourite from the Thames stable. It lasted 20 years and entertained generations. I'm, of course, talking about Rainbow.
Have we started yet?
Yes, I think they've started. Shh, quiet.
Oh, okay. I'll be quiet.
MIM's Ashley Byrne has been all around the streets and houses. And look who he's found. None other than Rod, Jane and Freddie. Enjoy.
So welcome to another edition of Distinct Nostalgia by MIM. And in our series, looking back at children's television programmes, which would grace our screens on ITV around lunchtime, we're focusing a little bit on Rainbow today, but also on Rainbow's sort of cousins, as it were. And we're welcoming in the studio Rod, Jane and Freddie. Thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Pleasure.
Nice to be here.
Now, I'm 47, and yes, creeping up.
So
to,
am I
creeping, creeping up to 50, and Rainbow will very soon be 50 years old.
Yeah,
and gosh, it's amazing, isn't it? Because it's, you know, I was talking to somebody earlier on today who was in the mid 20s, and I mentioned that I was coming to interview you, and she knew who you were.
Oh, she did?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
And people obviously my age know who you are.
Yeah. I think it's more in the 40s, isn't it?
but what I'm saying is, you know, it spreads so many generations,
yes,
doesn't it?
Yeah.
Which,
yeah,
that must be something very special for you in many ways.
I think it is very special.
Well, it's
you
brilliant.
Strangely go from being recognised by people 4 years old to people now who are 75 years old.
Really, not quite.
During the course of our lives, everything in between, which is fine, yeah, for me. I don't have a problem with it. I don't have a problem with the longevity of it.
No.
I love the fact that it lasted. We weren't in it from the beginning, actually.
No.
There was another band before us. But in fact, there were two. But I don't think they stayed very long. It's been great.
Well, if Telltale started, then Charlie, Carl and Julian,
yeah,
and then we came, of course, without Freddie.
Yes.
Rod and I.
No, I wasn't there to start with. I was busy elsewhere.
He was doing Rocky Horror Show.
Well, I was doing other things, but I ended up in the Rocky Horror Show.
So take us back, then.
Yeah, okay.
Way, way back.
Well,
tell us the definitive history.
Okay, well, in a nutshell, Rod wrote me a song for my audition for Rainbow, if that's about the right place to start.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And I went into the studio. Rod drove me up, and he had his banjo, of course. You know, one's always there at the ready.
I like to have my banjo at the ready. Still the case, actually.
Pamela Lonsdale was the producer.
Yeah.
I went in and I did a very nice audition, and she obviously liked me. And I played the piano, obviously,
yes,
it was my thing, keyboards, and sang Great Big Grey Elephants, which became a sort of classic, would you say?
Yeah, well, I would, yeah.
It was a beautiful song written by Rod. And she sort of clapped and said, oh, that was lovely, Jane. She said, where did that song come from? And I said, well, my husband, then husband, wrote it.
Yeah.
And she went, oh, and what's his name? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, well, he's here, actually. He just happens to be outside.
Yeah.
She said, oh, bring him in, bring him in. So Rod was brought up and sat down with his banjo. And then we did it again, of course, in harmony.
Yeah.
Which she just, well, her face was beaming. Great big grey elephants were standing around. That everyone's noses hung down to their toeses. Elephants. Nice lady, Pamela, and she could see that we were absolutely suitable for the job. And she'd said, follow me. And so we got up and walked down the corridors of Thames Television, got to her office, where she opened a drawer, took out two rainbow badges and said, welcome to Rainbow.
A It's fantastic.
I remember it vividly.
You couldn't script that, could you, really?
I mean, you couldn't, really.
Fantastic.
Mm. And, so how long had Rainwing been going by that point?
It started in 71, didn't it? So Telltale was only there for about...
72, I think it was.
72, yeah. It started?
Yeah.
So well, then Telltale were there for a very short time, and then Charlie, Carl and Julian must have been there for...
They weren't there... I think they were there for about a year.
A year.
If that, actually. Maybe a couple of series.
Yeah.
They've been very successful as actors.
Yeah.
Julian Lippmann as a musical director. Carl Johnson was the Carl.
He's
in everything. Yeah, yeah. Wonderful good, actor.
Great actor.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
Charlie continues to
Charlie Dore has written for... everybody song so they've done well nice people we still know
fantastic so that was your basically your introduction to
that was our introduction
to Rainbow.
They were trying to find a trio to replace Charlie, Carl and Julian and so Freddie well you can take up
well,
the story
okay.
there but...
parallel to this to Jane and Rod getting the job Matthew Corbett rang me and
Sooty Show Matthew
and he was working at Thames Television with his dad doing the Sooty Show, but he was keeping an eye out for extra work because Matthew liked to sort of spread himself around if he could.
Yeah.
And he heard that they were looking for two guys to do this new kid show called Rainbow. And he thought me and him, should run up this sort of little act together as a duo. So we went to the studio as a duo and did some numbers. He played the piano, I played guitars, which was fine. And this floor manager came up to me at the end and he said, do you know any children's songs? Which you'd think you would, wouldn't you, really?
Yeah.
And I went, no, I don't actually know any children's songs at all. I know these great introverted sort of poppy sort of things. So anyway, Matthew sang this fantastic version of Ugly Duckling. He got the job. Rod and Jane already had been given the job. So the trio that took over from the other three, Rod, Matt and Jane.
Right.
I went off into the great blue yonder and did, I went touring, I think, or went to Northampton to
rep. A lot of adverts you did.
And did things like that. And then it was years later, after Matt had left, I'd re-auditioned. That didn't work for various reasons. That I was actually stripping pine in Kilburn because I had no work. And Jane rang me up because we kept in touch.
Yeah.
And she said, Roger Walker, who was then part of their team, was leaving and was I going to re-audition? And I thought, well, do I actually want to do it again? I don't know. So I did. I got the job.
Third time lucky.
Yeah.
Now I'm sitting in here talking to you, Ashley, about how fantastic it was to be on the programme. It was wonderful.
Yeah, it was a long...
That was the
Rod,
thing,
Jane
actually,
and Freddie it runs off the tongue better than...
Rod, Matt and Jane, or Rod, Jane and Roger, which was never quite...
What are you going to say, sorry?
I can't remember. Do you know, I've got a shocking... I can make something up and pretend it was what I was going to say. I do want to point out that a children's show it may have been, but it was an extremely professional setup, taken seriously, but not too seriously by the cast, all of whom basically were actors rather than, you know,
just
personalities.
A or something,
But it was several shows a week, wasn't it? It was
Two
or three shows
hectic.
A week, I think it was.
Well, when we first joined, it was, wasn't it every day?
We did,
it went out every day.
It was transmitted every day.
But we did three shows a week.
Yeah.
So three songs to write, three songs to arrange, three songs to... I didn't know. I used to mime to the wrong songs.
At one point, Ashley, it was nine... At most points, it was nine songs going.
Yeah.
You had three that were being recorded, three that were being performed,
three that were being written.
Right, okay.
So, you know, the songs,
I remember now what I was going to say. When we first took over, I hope I've got this right, they said, don't write the first song, just do one that Charlie, Carl and Julian had written. So we'd kind of got a free one for the first performance. And I said, I was doing the same part as Julian Lippmann. I said, how did he perform it? And they said, he sang his verse walking down some steps on his hands.
Yes.
And I said, what? What?
Yeah.
So
yes,
I didn't. That was a kind of worrying moment, but
and
it all went fine. No
the
problem.
Other, I say this because I feel quite proud about it. The first song we sang that on that first show, which was three shows, so it was one of their songs. It was Hush, Little Baby, you know, Little Baby, don't say a word. And I sang it sitting on a rocking chair. And when it was over, The director came down. He said, "That's the best lip sync I've ever seen." And I was, do you remember that, Rod?
Wow. I do.
I was just so over the moon. It was brilliant. What was the third song? Can you remember?
No, I can't remember the last one.
Because the recording process then was, it was different. When I turned up, we were actually using the music suite then as a studio. But if I'm right, Rod and Jane and Matt used to record live, as it were, to quarter-inch tape in the studio before the show sometimes. Yeah, you'd have to do that because it was so compressed, the time. So they'd do live and then they'd actually record the TV show and they'd have to mime to what they'd just done.
Yeah, yeah.
So you were reliant on a huge amount of people
who
were talented, obviously. The sound guys were really brilliant.
Now, you got your role in Rainbow. You must have been excited about the fact that you were going to be part of it.
Yeah.
But, of course, Rainbow includes lots of interesting characters. They were all quite unpredictable in their own little ways, aren't they?
Oh, yes.
Tell us about that. Tell us about encountering those various characters for the first time.
Strangely, what was difficult was that one person, Roy Skelton, marvellous actor,
hugely talented,
did the voices for both the puppets.
Yes.
You knew
Zippy
that probably.
And George.
Yes.
But he wasn't anywhere near the puppets. So he would be right over the other side of the studio in a little booth. But initially, if a puppet talks to you or appears to be talking to you, what I found I was doing was turning to Roy, doing the voices of the puppets, rather than turning to the puppets, if you see what I mean.
Yes.
But it does take a bit of getting used to.
Yeah,
but what was brilliant was that he could ad-lib quite a lot to bolster the character.
Yes.
And the puppeteers picked it up. I mean, when I tried putting the... These were big puppets. Mm. You know, they had their hands above their heads for 20 minutes. When I tried to make one come to life, it didn't. It was dead as a dodo. But when they put their hand in these things, they picked up ad-libs. I'm doing it now, isn't that strange?
Yeah.
They picked up ad-libs and they were completely alive. Extraordinary.
Yeah, yeah.
Good
but
characters.
Equally interestingly, sometimes we used to have little guests come in, little kids.
Yeah.
And so you had the puppet sitting at their desk and Roy was in the corner with his microphone. They never even gave him a second look. They just went straight to the puppets, who were just waggling away like this. And it was, you know, equally very interesting. That
and
they
did you
just...
find, I mean, I you know, I've met various puppet heroes of mine, including, you know, Hartley Hare from Pipkins and whatever.
Yeah.
And even though I knew it was Nigel Plaskett, you know, doing him, you know, next, he's next to me.
Yeah.
I still talk to Hartley Hare as though it's Hartley Hare.
Yes. Yes.
Did you find over time that you did start to treat them as real beings?
They were fantastic characters,
It's a very odd experience being in the studio, really. I mean, my first experience of a sort of the collective one, which was usually a picnic in the garden.
Yes.
So there's, they've got Zippy and George and Bungle. Everybody's together and there's all these humans milling around. And you suddenly think, you know, this is very surreal, this. This is peculiar. And we're all treating it very seriously. We've got to do this. And then, turn to George, say this line. George is going to sing now. Get the guitar. And you think...
And Zippy would say something sarcastic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or when there was a camera break or whatever, or it fell apart, which it sometimes did. There was lots of fun and games going on behind the wall. They'd throw things at you and...
We'll be back after a quick break.
You still loading them and heating them up with all your single shit you've been dropping. You feel me? Loading them up on. It only takes structure. And you know, just paying attention to the climate of the game.
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
So do your homies got a role in your little, you mean?
Yeah, we all artists over here, man.
Y'all
trying,
already?
Yeah, I'm trying to get them on there.
Look,
we all artists, man. We go, you feel me? We gonna have this like,
bro, me and my man Kai, we be like, I don't know, we play with this shit right now.
I
gonna lie, we play with this shit right now for real.
Don't,
I gonna lie.
Don't play with it. Take that shit serious.
They do all sorts of things.
I remember when Bungle Bear bent over to straighten out the rug for the picnic, one of the puppets said, "Oh, what a wonderful spread, Jeffrey." That's fairly typical of the kind of stuff that went on all the time.
Yeah. I can imagine.
Yes, it's hilarious. And Bungle Bear used to say, "Oh, Rod, You could make an old bear very happy.
But he also said that Pamela Lonsdale, the producer, had his tail docked. And he always used to say, I've never been quite the same since I was docked.
Because when I remember it, it was the very cuddly Bungle. But then when I look back at the older episodes that I wouldn't have seen because I was too young.
Yes.
He looked quite
hard. God, he was like something from the moon. Scary and awful. Yeah, that's why they got rid of him, basically. Right, okay. And the new Bungle became a much bigger head and cuddly. Yes. Yeah, cuddly.
There were two, before we did it, there were two puppets called Mooney and Sunshine.
Oh, right, okay.
Great names.
Rainbow.
Yeah.
I love those names. I think they're great. I'm not too sure about Mooney, but Sunshine.
What do you think was obviously Thames TV? It became a flagship program of Thames, those of us of a certain generation. If you see the Thames TV ident logo coming on, you automatically want to sing the rainbow thing.
Yeah,
right afterwards.
Yeah. Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
They're together. That's part of it.
Yeah.
So it became very iconic TV series. But at the time, do you think you knew what you were doing? I don't mean that in a very flippant way. Do you think there was an ethos? There was something you had a mission that they wanted you to achieve.
Had been told that it was a sort of spin-off from Sesame Street. And then we knew that they certainly wanted to start having magazine programme.
Format,
thank you. So, song, interlude, story, a bit of biz with the puppets.
It wasn't overt overall. I mean, there was an educational advisor who used to read all the scripts and say, you can't use this content, try using this, or this is a theme that children should be...
But it wasn't worthy,
No, not in that sense.
It was entertainment, basically.
Oh, God, yes.
Exactly,
yeah.
That was the whole point of it.
Yes, I'm afraid the poor... We just took it serious. I mean, we enjoyed every second of it, always messing around, but in a controlled way, and always gave our best.
Yes.
That was the thing.
I think the educational advisor had quite a tough time. You know, she was always trying to sort of put her four pennyworth in, and everybody was sort of stamping it down because, nobody wanted to make it into a sort of boring educational
program. It had to be lifted off the page, and sometimes there was sort of a bit of manoeuvring. The directors used to sort of fiddle with the scripts a bit, but if there was a mission, it was to make sure that the children were first, and the content of the program was always aimed and suitable for them. It wasn't, we couldn't just add any old thing that we wanted.
Through the years, we had much more involvement. Mm. We started with just the song. It would be now the song, and then on to the rest of it. And that was just one song. In the end, we were in the press set, as we called it, the presentation set.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We were involved with all the dialogue and...
Yeah, I'll get the ladder.
You were an essential part of it, weren't you?
Well, in a way, yes. Yeah, yeah. In fact, well, yes.
They needed to integrate everything, because I think the audience... You see, we didn't see an audience.
No.
And we had no contact
with... You know an audience at all, yeah.
I mean, you go out into the outside world and people see you and they talk to you. But you didn't actually realise the impact the programme was actually having on children or their parents.
Yes.
And, but they were a combination, the two things.
Mm. But also, not having an audience, you're not quite sure how you're being received.
No.
I mean, it won a BAFTA, which is nice. But when we finished doing Rainbow, we toured the whole country for years, all the big theatres. I mean, we played hundreds and hundreds of them. And suddenly you find that you're filling the Bristol Hippodrome, 2,500 seater roughly, twice a day, just the three of us.
Yeah. And that was because we were from Rainbow, is what you're trying to say.
Absolutely. It's amazing.
It was amazing.
We didn't see a lot of fan mail either. We had a secretary called Seema who took it upon herself to vet everything.
Oh, really?
That arrived. Yeah, well, we were so busy.
Yes.
That, the programme was very demanding in terms of time. So even if you'd had a sack full of mail, you couldn't have opened it and read it. So Seema used to handle all this stuff. But she used to be very, very editorial about what you got. So sometimes you'd wander into the studio with one letter and she'd say, somebody's written to you. And you chuck in this letter, you'd open it, and they'd be asking for autographs and pictures and various things. And you think, wow, we're not sort of meeting many people. And yet there was a room somewhere that was stuffed with mailbags.
Exactly. How important was Geoffrey in the program?
Very.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, essential, actually.
Yeah.
I'd say.
A great actor.
Very overlooked, a very good actor. And I thought he was a very good presenter, actually. very natural.
It's a really difficult job, that. Mm. You know, he made it look so simple and so easy. You'd imagine, I could do that, I could do that. And you can't. You know, to be, as it were, yourself and yet still be performing is an absolute art
And not
form.
Be too patronising.
He was great at it. Mm. Yeah. I couldn't do it. Yeah. It was fine for me to come on in dungarees and things and fall over and go, oh, I don't know, who put that like skate there over you? I'll kill you or something. And they go, cut, you can't say kill.
Because if anybody had to treat the puppets with respect and as characters, it was him, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yes.
And he was there all the time.
No, he didn't get the credit he deserved, I think, for that.
And there was a lot of presenters on programmes like Pipkins and others who came and went, and similar kind of programmes.
Yeah.
And he stayed there for years and years and years, didn't he?
I mean, beyond 20
long,
years.
Long
yeah,
time.
Yeah.
Exactly, amazing.
And then when they tried to change the format and the formula and everything and everybody, it just wasn't the same.
No.
And that's why it didn't last after it all finished as Us.
I was living in North London years and years and years ago, and I happened to be in the corner shop standing next to Geoffrey, and Geoffrey and I have been in rep together up in Scotland in Dundee. And we sort of said hello, and, you know, and I said to him, what are you doing? And he went, hey, I'm just going up to see this woman down at Thames Television because there's some kid show just about to start, and I've got to go and talk to her about whether she wants me to do it. And I don't know whether I'll do it, I don't know. And we said goodbye. And there you are, you see. Years later, I walked into the studio. Hi, Jeff, how are you doing? Yeah, okay. Long time ago in the corner shop.
Yeah.
Those dungarees. Really, the mention of dungarees takes me back.
Yeah.
That image.
Well, I'm still wearing them.
I went into Homebase after we'd finished, and they were all wearing green dungarees in there. I thought, my God, that's what happened to them.
No, people overuse this phrase of you know, the glory days of television.
Yeah.
But in a way, we are talking about the glory days of television, right? Thames Television, you know, like Yorkshire TV and Granada TV and the big ones around the country, was churning out literally hundreds and hundreds of fantastic
really
programmes all the time, weren't they?
Yes.
What was it like as a place to work, a place to go to? I mean, did you really look forward to going there every
time?
Oh, yes.
Thames Television was wonderful. Yeah. Absolutely wonderful.
You could walk into Studio One in particular. They had full orchestras in there. They had megastars, you know.
Tommy Cooper, Kenny Everett, you name it, Mike...
Mike Yarwood.
Benny Hill. All the big light end shows were in Studio One.
I can't tell jokes, actually. I can't. It's just something I'm not good at, you know. I just fumble and splutter. And for some odd reason, I went into the bar, as you did, after the show, and Barry Cry was there. And I sat down next to him and was having a chat, and I'd just been told a joke, which was very funny. And for some reason, I started telling it to Barry Cryer and regretted it from the moment I started. And I was about halfway through, and Eric Morecambe walked in, and Barry Cryer said, oh, come over here, Eric. Rod's telling a joke. Oh, God, I'm blushing now just thinking of it. If the floor could have opened up and I could have gone through a hole in it, I'd have done it. Oh, it was one of the most embarrassing.
What was the reaction?
Oh, I was just sent up something wrong by both of them. No laugh at all, you know.
I think, you know, there was time then. There was time to do everything. We used to have dress rehearsals, which, I mean, nowadays in television...
Yeah, you would do that.
...is completely out of the question. There's no dress rehearsal. You just go straight for a take. And so we were able to relax.
Yeah, but did it in one take. I mean, after the dress rehearsal, the actual take was the programme.
Seamless.
Yeah. Teddington was just a great place. You know, it was
right
on
the
river.
Yeah.
So you've got this fantastic sort of view out of the, say, the CAF window. You know, it's brilliant. Everybody knew each other.
Yeah.
That was the thing. I don't know what it was like for people to come to do one production and then go. But to be there long term was brilliant. You could walk down the corridor, say hello to everybody. Everybody knew you.
Yeah.
It's like an enormous family. Yeah, it was absolutely fantastic.
The food in the restaurant and canteen was so cheap. I think it was subsidised by the bar, actually.
Yeah.
It was so cheap that people used to buy sirloin steaks for their dogs.
Yeah.
Take them home.
Yeah.
It's the intermission. Oh, this is my bit. This is my bit. Coming up on Distant Nostalgia.
Ooh, can I have a go?
No.
Ooh.
Coming soon from Distinct Nostalgia, the Enthusiasts podcast. We mark 35 years of hit BBC soap, EastEnders. Fan and actor Rani Singh presents a series of special interviews as she recalls her very own EastEnders roots.
Hi, I'm Rani Singh. I played a character called Sophia Kareem in the soap. I ran a mini-mart called First Till Last, and I had two kids and a husband, and most of my time on screen was spent trying to get my husband to stay faithful. I'm really looking forward to catching up with old members of cast and current ones too. Hope you'll join me.
Distinct Nostalgia, remembering the early years of EastEnders, from the 19th of February. Subscribe to Distinct Nostalgia by MIM now, from wherever you get your podcasts.
Going back to the actual, to Rainbow itself, and to those two characters, Zippy and George.
George and Zippy, yeah.
What do you think was particularly special about them? And obviously they're still going strong today, people still performing. Still performing. What was special about them? I mean, I always think of, you know, Zippy being quite sort of, let's say, sarcastic.
And mouthy.
And all the rest of it.
Yeah, yeah, a huge contrast between.
And there are plenty
the
of people out there. You could think of Zippy, that's a George. Okay. What was special about them? And do you think they were, in a way, quite ahead of their time, in the sense that they were, let's face it, they're a bit camp, weren't they?
Yeah.
In a way.
Very.
Well, there was absolutely nothing like them. I mean, there were a lot of puppeteers out there with various sort of creatures or people or whatever, or ventriloquists even, if you like, you know. But there was nothing like those two. They were wildly eccentric, polar opposites, and yet somehow there was a magic chemistry between the two of them.
Yeah.
You could feel things for them. Really, which was really quite extraordinary. I know it seems weird to say
No, and I mean, of course,
but you could. When George was miserable or unhappy, you know, everybody was sort of, you could get that pathos. And that was really, really important.
And this, of course, is down to Roy's incredible talent.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
he could switch from Zippy to George voices in a milli, you know.
Well, he was having an argument with himself.
Yes, he was having an argument with himself.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
yeah, extraordinary.
And I think Zippy developed, didn't he? He started out as not quite so, because of course he was the Dalek, you know.
Right.
Roy Skelton was a Dalek.
Yes, yes.
So let's face it, Zippy and Dalek.
Similar kind of thing.
Now we know what they really look like.
They all
look like Roy.
But I mean, we used to do numbers.
So what is Zippy supposed to be?
Well, they used to think he might be a peeled tortoise.
Okay.
Yeah. And nobody ever really knew.
No, okay, he was just a Zippy.
There was George was this pink hippo, allegedly, but. I mean, there was a sort of formlessness, characterlessness about them, in a sense.
Yeah.
But there was a strong identity. The audience, very, very identifiable. They'd have their favourites. You'd like Zippy, you'd either like George.
Yes. Yeah.
You weren't really a fan of both.
No.
You'd have one or the other, really. Yeah. Very Marmite.
And we used to do songs that included them, particularly.
Of course.
There was one song, and I mean, people were in tears about George.
It was
Oh, George, If Only You Knew. It was one of yours, darling.
Oh.
One of Rod's. It was Emotions, obviously, was the kind of
Friendship, I can't remember.
Friendship, something like that. It was just about how much we loved him. He'd had a bad day or something, you know. It was always a theme.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a very heart-rending song. And the whole of the audience in the studio, the cameramen and everybody, were quite moved.
Yeah.
We all went out one day to Richmond Park. They'd had a new set built for Rainbow, and so we did this programme about moving house, because we were going to a new house, which meant that we did quite a bit of what we were doing on film, and it was a song that kept repeating about moving.
Yeah.
And the puppets were with us, so George and Zippy were with us, and it's quite complex when they've got to have a counter to be behind. You're in Richmond Park going downhill. We're pushing the counter. They're on tiny little stools,
little
sitting
trolleys
under this thing, waving the puppets around, trying. Everybody's trying to mime to this song, which was great until we let go of the counter. And then it just sailed on down the hill with them in it. But, you know, that was some of the things we used to end up doing, really, as a combination.
Now, we're talking about it now, and obviously it's a huge part, massive part of your lives.
Yeah.
It changed your lives in many ways.
Yeah.
And not everybody who's listening will understand that, in the sense that we're talking about a period of time now. Okay, it was children's TV, so it was only a certain amount of people watching at that particular time.
Yeah.
But Rainbow and it's offshoots, and then obviously you, Rod, Jane and Freddie is a separate program. Mm. It was massive, wasn't it?
I mean, it literally was huge.
Yeah. Yeah. Just give us a... I mean, you've talked about some of the shows that you did around the country. Mm. But just give us an idea of how big it was. Was there a period of time when you couldn't walk down the street without being recognised?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Well,
and
if you're
now...
on telly five times or sometimes twice a day,
it's
inevitable, isn't it?
Yes.
So,
we didn't get a lot of holidays because we worked very hard.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's, you know, just the way it was. Jane and I went on holiday to the Seychelles, to a tiny, tiny little island. You could walk round it in half an hour. That's how big this island was, 3 feet above sea level. And there were 20 huts on this island. That was it. Nobody else could stay. There was about 40 people max. Yeah. And we arrived, say, on a Friday, and on Saturday morning, we were walking to the communal lodge for breakfast, and this voice went, "I can't believe it, it's Rod, Jane and Freddie!"
And we're always joined at the hip.
And there we are, in the middle of the Indian Ocean, on this coral island, and a nice lady from Birmingham with her daughter had to sign autographs. Have you got any pictures?
Yeah,
and I think another good story for that is when we played Liverpool.
Yes.
Which is a 2,000-seater. We were sold out, and the show lasted 2 hours. This is our Rod, Jane and Freddie stage show.
Yeah.
It lasted 2 hours, and we finished the show, and we came down, and the door guy said, "Oh, there's a few people who need some autographs. Do you mind not changing?" And just so we went, "No, okay." We went down to the dock door. He opened the dock door, and the whole of Lime Street was just full of the audience who'd emptied out, and plus people coming from Lime Street Station, seeing the crowd thinking, "Who's it? Oh, it's Rod, Jane and Freddie." "What, Rod, Jane and Freddie?" And suddenly I was up on somebody's shoulders. I've never felt more like Madonna that particular time. And we were there for 2 hours.
Really?
Yeah.
So as long as the show.
Actually, it's rather good that, because where we were standing, we could see out over people, and Steve Coogan was on that night.
Oh, yeah.
At the Empire,
yeah.
And we could see him at the back of the crowd, not able to get in.
Oh, right, okay.
And he wasn't very happy about not being able to into the theatre because he needed to do some work.
Yeah.
So you're thinking, "Oh, yeah, well, that's not so bad, eh, Steve? Hello, children presenters over here."
So that question I was mentioned about it being, having changed your lives.
Yeah.
It didn't just change your lives, it hasn't just had an influence on your lives professionally, it's awfully influenced your lives personally, hasn't it?
I would say so.
Does somebody want to tell us about that side of things a little bit? Just how it's sort of, your lives have merged into one, haven't they, really?
Well, Rod and I were married, and it's quite old history now. And in fact, we were already divorced by the time Freddie turned up.
Yes. Yeah.
So, and then I hooked up with Freddie, and Freddie hooked up with me. And
hang on, let me think. I can't remember.
I have never had any trouble with that at all.
No, in fact,
had we got divorced and she'd gone off with some nutter, I would have been upset, but I couldn't think of anybody better as a substitute, as it were, than Fred. I remember saying, to Jane, Fred would be a good one for you.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like a natural move. I've never had a problem with it. We're very close
as
a trio,
and I think,
to this day, so it's lovely.
And I think that is the reason we were able to tour for 9 years, 8 years,
seven.
Whatever it was, seven.
7 years we toured.
Without a crossword, we just understood each other so well.
Mm-hmm. Also, a word of advice for anybody who wants to get into a band, share the money.
Yes.
Yes.
That is the root of all problems.
Yeah. Yeah.
When one person makes more than somebody else.
Yes.
At some point it'll
well, famously,
get famously
Laurel
and
Hardy were in that situation.
Yes,
yeah.
Stamp, indeed.
It doesn't matter who wrote the songs in our case.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter who arranged it.
No.
Out of the three of us, we always put it down as having been done by all three of us.
Yeah.
And
that
it's a good thing.
Started,
I've never regretted it.
No.
That started when, of course, Freddie joined, because Rod and I were still getting royalties and stuff that Freddie wasn't.
Yes.
And then once we went on tour, it had to become absolutely...
Well, before then, I mean, it was really early on, because not long after I had actually joined the series with Rod and Jane, and we were sort of getting through my first series of Rainbow, as it were, there was a problem with one of the programmes that Thames were putting out called Spectrum. ratings, maybe. I don't know in those days. But anyway, they axed this program and they needed a filler. So they asked the three of us basically to sit on stools and sing old rainbow songs. That was their idea. Our director, John Woods, was not having any of that. And he said, why don't we do our own show? So we didn't tell anybody what we were doing. And so we ended up, that's how Roger and Freddie began.
Right.
But it was in that period, we were in the pub one night having a chat after a very, very long day. And Ross suddenly said, look, as we're doing all this work now, we're doing Rainbow, we're doing Roger and Freddie, let's all share everything. Because there was script writing to do, there was the songs to arrange and everything like this. And we all went, yeah, okay. And that was it. Yeah. That was our agreement. And it stayed that way and still is. It's the same deal now.
And you're still going strong today? You're still doing things today? You're still working today?
No, not
as a trio.
No, okay.
They tell you never to turn it down, but that's the worst piece of advice I've ever been given. You can age rapidly.
We carried on doing Panto for years
and things
like that. But now, you know, we're actually enjoying our own lives. You know, work was our life, and now we have a life.
Yes.
It's really great, and we've just looked back now. And
but that's one of the things, isn't it, about the closeness of how you work together, really. Mm-hmm. I spent more time with Rod and Jane on a daily basis than I ever did in my relationship with my then wife. I didn't see her because I was doing 17, 18-hour days with Rod and Jane.
But very enjoyable hours.
Yes,
I mean, we loved the work. We loved creating music.
Yeah.
It was
It was just the snowball effect of it, I think, really.
A couple of final things, then.
Okay.
So we're 50 years on, nearly.
Yeah.
And it's still remembered, and people still, you know, fondly talk about it. It was done as a reaction to an extent to Sesame Street, because I think
ITV
in particular didn't want kids to grow up sort of talking with American accents.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And
yeah.
Rainbow was a way of doing
it
differently.
Yeah.
Pipkins was the same, you know. So kind of,
yeah.
But what do you think is its lasting sort of legacy on kids' TV? I mean, kids' TV is very different today, isn't it?
Humans?
Yeah. Yes, yeah.
You know, we were... after us, it was all cartoon.
Mm.
I can hardly think of a single show that didn't have human beings. Okay, did Play School carry on? Play School still going?
Play Days and Play School carried on for quite a long time.
Yeah, they carried on for a bit, really.
But
I feel that children's programmes have evolved, and so they should. I watch quite a bit of children's TV with my grandchildren, aged 29 and 34. the quality of it is fantastic.
Mm. Oh, really?
I absolutely
love
it.
I must watch some, actually. I feel a bit guilty about that.
If we played a small part in that, I'd be very happy about that.
Nice
but other than
Ron.
That, I don't think there's a lasting... I don't think there's a real legacy. I think it was an immediate thing. Mm-hmm. At the time, it was perfect.
It was
and
a magical
it was done
formula.
For the right reasons, by the right people, and that's why it's fondly remembered.
But what lasts is that the legacy in people's own minds, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
You always, it's those programmes and those things you did as a kid that you identify with and that you hold special for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Even when you get into your dotage, it's that you remember, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, we're still in contact with a lot of people who were children when we were performing on the show, who are now, some of them are grandparents. Yeah. They have these VHS copies of the show, which they then show to their children and their children's children, etc.
Yeah.
And if you meet them, then you're meeting, as we said, right at almost at the beginning. You know, you've got like four generations.
Yeah, absolutely.
Danny Baker knows all the lyrics to pretty well every song.
Yes, he does.
Well, there are big dogs, small dogs,
short dogs and tall dogs,
good dogs, bad dogs, happy dogs, sad dogs.
Ooh, so many dogs.
You were obviously doing, you were defined as being entertainers around children mainly.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Did that hinder you at all? And did you regret that at all?
No. Well, we hadn't been before then.
No.
It
was a job.
Yeah.
It was a job, yeah. Freddie was an actor, I was an actor, and Rod...
Rod was an actor.
Rod was a graphic designer to start with, but he was a brilliant songwriter. He started the whole thing off. I wouldn't have written all the songs I wrote if it hadn't been for Rod.
Oh, you are nice.
So I think if I have any regrets about the other part of my professional life, would be that I never ended up in a Sondheim musical.
Okay,
which yeah. I would have loved to have gone and done something like that. But at the same time, it doesn't work.
There's still
work.
Time. There's still time.
I don't have any regrets at all. You know, no. I worked for a great many people in various productions.
Yeah.
And I was a cog in the machine. I was told to stand there and say this and do that.
Yeah.
Mm. When I worked on control. Rainbow, it was everything. Exactly, yeah, we were the creative
yeah.
people.
Yeah. yeah.
So
and that means a lot, doesn't it? It means a hell of a lot.
Huge amount, you know, you work for yourself, the quality remains at a particular level.
And it means you're trusted.
Brilliant. Yeah, absolutely. Rod, Jane and Freddie, thank you very much.
Oh,
it's a
pleasure,
actually. Thank you very much indeed.
Sing a song together, it's the end of the show. It's time to say goodbye, but before we go, we'd like to sing this last refrain, hoping that we can explain just what it means to us to be here with you.
Well, that was very enjoyable, wasn't it, George?
Yes, it brought back lots of memories.
I think we should say goodbye now. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Distinct Nostalgia is produced by MIM. And don't forget, next time, Ashley will be catching up with the real star of another 70s lunchtime kids' favourite.
I've got a feeling that Hartley might be about to appear.
Well, he insisted on coming along, didn't you, Hartley?
Yes, well, I'm here now, so shut up. Everybody shut up, it's my turn.
Sorry, Hartley.
Yes, Hartley here, and his right-hand man, Nigel Plaskett, are among those taking part in a reunion of some of those involved in the ATV show Pipkins. But for now, this is Tom Edwards, hoping you enjoyed listening to this Distinct Nostalgia podcast. Do let us know what you think, or if you'd like to suggest a subject for a program. You can reach us via Twitter at distinct_by MIM or go to www.madeinmanchester.tv. Bye for now.
See you the next time. Farewell. We'll make the sunshine. Say goodbye. Now it's time to go.
Bye.